as they protested the convoy.
The day downtown was the first day that I felt unsafe just walking down the street in broad daylight.
Heidi Beirich is with the Global Project Against Hate and Extremism.
They had some religious ceremonies that they participated in while they were down there, baptisms and things like that. And it was kind of like a MAGA gathering that occurred. But the whole focus is about the border, about backing Governor Greg Abbott.
Beirich adds she doesn't fear the extremist rally, but the disturbed people who might be influenced.
And the South Texas Proud Boys told people to go and get your guns and go down to the border. Other neo-Nazi groups said similar kinds of things over the weekend. And, you know, what people like me really worry about are lone wolf actors who might get riled up by this and do something terrible like happened at the El Paso Walmart back in 2019.
And in local news, New York City faces its first big snowfall of the winter. Commissioner of Emergency Management Zach Iskell.
We're expecting 5 to 8 inches of snow. We'll start with rain around midnight tonight with a shift to snow sometime in the early mornings. We could see rates of 1 to 2 inches per hour. This could lead to difficult travel and low visibility for the morning commute.
Kids can expect to stay home, but school's Chancellor David Banks says, don't call it a snow day.
Our schools are still in session, just differently. And so the long gone are the days of just a snow day and everybody just has off. So we're going to have a big snowstorm, most likely, but our students, we expect for them to be fully engaged.
Paul D'Arienzo, New York.
Stay tuned for the following programs coming up in this hour. First being the evening edition of Democracy Now!, followed by Counterspin, all here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. It's 1 minute past 6 p.m.
Democracy Now!
It was an Apache firing with a really loud noise. The F-16s fired, the Cobra, the drone, all kinds of aircraft. Terror, terror, so much terror. They wiped out mosques, people, and displaced people. They kept saying, go to Rafah, go to Rafah. And people came here, and then you target them?
Palestinian health officials say Israeli strikes in Rafah in southern Gaza have killed at least 67 people overnight. As concern grows, Israel will soon launch a ground invasion. Over a million displaced Palestinians have sought refuge in Rafah. We'll speak with a teacher trying to evacuate Rafah with her young children.
The situation is very hard. I want people to know we are human like them. Our children, Yanni, they deserve life. You must fire. If they cannot ceasefire, just leave us to get out from Gaza, to be survived.
We'll also speak with Palestinian human rights attorney Noura Erekat as the U.S., the European Union, the United Nations, and countries around the world warn Israel against a full ground invasion of Rafah. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. It's wonderful to be back. Palestinian health officials say overnight Israeli strikes on Rafah in southern Gaza have killed at least 67 people. As concern grows, Israel will soon launch a full-scale ground invasion. Over a million displaced Palestinians have sought refuge in Rafah, which borders Egypt, after Israel claimed it was a safe zone. Palestinians in Rafah say a mosque and several houses were hit by the overnight Israeli strikes.
It was an Apache firing with a really loud noise. The F-16s fired, the Cobra, the drone, all kinds of aircraft. Terror, terror, so much terror. They wiped out mosques, people, and displaced people. They kept saying, go to Rafah, go to Rafah. And people came here, and then you target them?
Over the weekend, Israel carried out numerous airstrikes in Rafah, including one that leveled a five-story home, killing at least 8 people.
My sister and her husband are sleeping in the room, and my mother and my other sister with her children in the living room. Me and my father in the room over here. Suddenly, a rocket fell on us. My sister, her husband, and their children, including my niece, who is 2 months old, all gone.
The overnight airstrikes came as Israeli forces carried out an operation Rafah to free two Israeli Argentine hostages who were found to be in good condition. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu faces increasing pressure at home to secure the release of the remaining hostages in Gaza. Earlier today, a relative of the two men freed in Rafah called for Israel to reach a deal now.
And we know about the discussions in Cairo or in Paris and others between the Hamas, between Israeli, with the mediators. Please be serious and strike a deal. The Israeli people needs the deal done. Not yesterday, not tomorrow, today. We want it done as soon as possible in order for to give us some breathe. We must breathe a little bit here.
On Sunday, President Biden spoke by phone with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, warning against Israel launching a ground invasion of Rafah. Aid agencies fear the offensive would cause massive casualties, while UNICEF has warned an escalation of Israel's attacks on Rafah will cause hunger and disease to skyrocket. Hamas cautioned an Israeli invasion of Rafah will torpedo ongoing negotiations for a truce. Authorities in Egypt have also threatened to suspend a key peace treaty with Israel if Rafah is invaded. For more, we're going directly to Rafah to speak with Duha Latif. She's a 29-year-old teacher from Gaza trying to evacuate Rafah with her young children, 6-year-old Amir and 1.5-year-old Karim. Duha, welcome to Democracy Now!, especially under these difficult circumstances. We appreciate you being with us. You are a native of Rafah. Can you describe the situation there now?
Hello, Amy. Thanks for hosting. I'm sure most of you saw the news yesterday and what happened in Rafah. It was the worst night in my life, and I really cannot believe that I am still alive. And actually, situation here is very terrible. Rafah is a small city, and now 1.5 million people in Rafah, and Rafah is just 55 square kilometers, which means that per square kilometers in Rafah, they around 24,000 Palestinians. Just imagine this, Amy. Therefore, it's very difficult to get food, water, or medicine, in addition to the spread of diseases because of large population. Also, Rafah is a city with no hospital, no electricity, no bakeries since 4 months. This is the situation here.
You are 29 years old. You're a teacher, Duha, in Rafah?
Right. Yes, that's right.
The city has swelled to 4 times the population. Can you talk about your attempts to get out with your two little ones, your 1.5-year-old and your 6-year-old?
The issue of leaving Rafah and evacuation to Egypt is very complicated, and it's very, very expensive because we need the approval of the Egyptian side to grant us exit arrangements, which cost a large amount of money. And this is what we don't have at the present time. And this is what GoFundMe created, a GoFundMe account, because we don't have money to get out from Gaza.
What do you mean? How much money does it cost to leave Gaza? What are you raising money for?
In fact, I can't determine that exactly, but I can tell you that the amount required to be paid to exit Gaza is considered somewhat high, very high, especially in our current case. This amount includes the travel cost and expensive coordination, in addition to what is required when we arrive in Egypt side. Of course, if we're still alive, such as renting a place to stay and buy clothes and food and children needs. Actually, we don't know to whom this money goes, and I cannot mention specific side, but what I know is that we have to pay this amount for one of Egyptian offices.
Can you talk about your little ones and how they are processing what's happening right now? Do you hear bombing, shelling around you?
Yes, yes. Last night, maybe you see this in the news. Yani it was terrible, and we are, yani that my children was scared all the night, and they crying, and maybe you see what happened in the news, and what happened really is very, very hard and difficult.
I'm wondering if you heard the relative of the two Israeli-Argentine hostages who the Israeli military freed in Rafah. Their relative said, please have a truce now. It is not enough that you have freed our two loved ones.
Yes, no, I don't hear this. And yani, I am like you. I hear this just from the news.
So if you can talk about, at this point, what message you have for President Biden. You may have heard that his aides are saying that he's made mistakes in dealing with the Middle East. What message do you have for President Biden?
I will yani send a message. Yani I have two children, and they are always nervous and afraid from the voices they hear around us, and always ask me question. I don't have the answer, the answer for it. Mom, when can we get out? Mom, when we will eat burger? Mom, when we can go back to school? And it's difficult to call children while the mother needs somebody to call her. So my message to President Biden, we are innocent civilians, and we have no fault in what is happening. Our children deserve to live a normal life like the rest of the world's children. Just one word, President Biden, cease fire now. You have the power to make it happen right now.
And Dua, do you have access to clean water? Also, have you taken in refugees from other parts of Gaza at this point into your own home?
And actually, Amy, yes, I have, but there is only canned food, beans and tuna. For 4 months, my children are in a growing stage and need healthy and useful food like egg, milk, fruits. And all of this doesn't exist at the present time. There is no clean water because of this. My young son, Kareem, 1.5 years, suffered from intestinal catarrh. And also, there is no medicine for this. Also about the refugee, our situation, like the situation of 1,000 people here in Rafah. Yes, I have many refugees in my home. They are my relatives from Gaza and northern Gaza. Every home in Rafah is full of refugees.
Well, I thank you so much for taking this time speaking to us from Rafah.
Amy, I want just to say a word, can I?
Yes.
We are urgently trying to leave Rafah, but we need money to leave. We have a GoFundMe account. If people want to support us by donating or sharing or help my family, we need to leave to keep my family safe.
Well, Dua Latif, I thank you so much for being with us. 29-year-old teacher from Rafah trying to evacuate there with her young children, her 6-year-old Amir and her 1.5-year-old Karim. In the United States, the European Union, countries around the world are warning Israel against a ground invasion of Rafah in southern Gaza, where over 1 million Palestinians have sought refuge from the rest of Gaza. One top EU official said it could lead to a, quote, unspeakable humanitarian catastrophe. Authorities in Egypt have threatened to suspend a key peace treaty with Israel if Rafah is invaded. Hamas has also warned an Israeli invasion of Rafah will torpedo ongoing truce talks. For more, we're joined by Palestinian human rights attorney Noura Erekat and an associate professor at Rutgers University, author of the book Justice for Some, Law and the Question of Palestine. Welcome back to Democracy Now!, Noura. If you can start off by responding to this threat over the weekend that plans are being readied to invade, for Israel to invade Rafah, and the world, countries around the world, warning Israel not to do this. Apparently, President Biden doing that in a phone call with Netanyahu as well. Your response and what this would mean?
Good morning, Amy. It might be a bit refreshing to hear these warnings sound off from across the world in various capitals, but they are completely and wholly inadequate, given that we know that this is a plausible genocide, given that we know what Israel has said, despite multiple warnings. It created a ground invasion on October 27th. It has destroyed all of the hospitals. It has blown up all of the universities. It has created a situation of starvation, of a lack of even water. There is a humanitarian crisis that even without another bomb falling will lead to sure death of thousands of Palestinians. These capitals, these states have an arsenal of diplomatic options available to them to stop a genocide. First and foremost is a UN Security Council resolution demanding an immediate ceasefire. Short of that is the cutting of weapons transfers, as has the Netherlands High Court demanded this morning of stopping the transfer of F-35 jet parts to Israel. Belgium has stopped weapons transfers. Japan has cut military contracts. Short of that, these states can cut diplomatic ties. What is it to the population of Rafah now basically bracing themselves for more massacre, for warnings to a state that is responsible under international law and accountable? And if it is not responsible or accountable, it is either a complete rogue state that must be isolated by everybody, or it means that all these other countries are complicit and basically covering responsibility for themselves by issuing empty warnings.
I wanted to go to that issue of the Netherlands court ordering the Dutch government to stop exporting. These are U.S.-made F-35 jet parts being stored in the Netherlands to Israel. In the ruling, one of the judges wrote, quote, "It is undeniable that there's a clear risk that the exported F-35 parts are used in serious violations of international humanitarian law." In November, Oxfam and Amnesty International sued the Dutch government, saying the arms transfers violate Netherlands' obligations under international law to prevent war crimes. Are you seeing this escalating around the world and other countries doing the same? Certainly Germany gives even more weapons, and of course the United States the most.
I am seeing a surge. We have seen for the past five months, the only thing that has kept humanity together is the surge of civil society, which has waged lawsuits, which has risen in protest to do the work that states have failed to do. We see in the United States, the Center for Constitutional Rights bring a lawsuit in the Northern District of California, where the judge agreed that the ICJ was correct, that this is undeniable, a case of genocide, but he doesn't have the jurisdiction in order to stop the Biden administration. We saw the highest court in the world say the same thing, that this is plausibly genocide. We are seeing a series of judicial decisions that are coming to the same conclusion, but none of them can be enforced without political will, which is being impeded in the Security Council by the United States. Let's be clear. The ICJ on January 26, when it issued its provisional orders, said that that the international community has a duty and a responsibility according to its responsibility under the Genocide Convention, not to perpetuate Israel's genocidal campaign. We see Israel directly violating those provisional orders. Nearly 2,000 Palestinians have been killed since January 26. We know for a fact that they have impeded the access to humanitarian aid, going so far as the Israeli Navy shooting, lobbing at UN humanitarian convoys from the Mediterranean Sea. We also see very clearly a continuing incitement to genocide, most recently in the convening of a far-right coalition of, I think, 11 ministers in government under the banner of settlement. Brings security and victory. There is an explicit campaign to depopulate the Gaza Strip, to resettle it. No one is mincing words. Everybody is watching, covering themselves with these empty promises and warnings as Israel continues with its campaign. And this is a warning to the world. This is a warning to the world that we are watching, that this is very blatant and being exposed. In this situation that we have right now, in the worst case scenario, Israel will continue with its campaign. Egypt, which is trying to prevent this from happening, will likely create a buffer zone in the Sinai. If Israel is actually successful in pushing out the Palestinians, they will be stuck in that buffer zone, as have refugees from Syria been stuck at the buffer zone with Jordan and Iraq. That is the worst case scenario. Israel or Netanyahu telling the world that they're going to evacuate the Palestinians up north mean nothing when the north has been decimated. Rafah is the last standing city. They should not be taken. There's nowhere to go north. Israel must stop its genocidal campaign now. If it wants to offer refuge to Palestinians, it must offer refuge to Palestinians within what is historic Palestine, Palestine 1948, where they can actually be housed safely and where we know Israel does not want them and will return them to Gaza. There are many options at our disposal, and yet none of them are being accessed in this moment.
I want to ask you your thoughts on this latest development, the overnight airstrikes in Rafah, coming as Israeli forces carried out an operation to free two Israeli Argentine hostages who were found to be in good condition, Fernando Simon Marman, age 60, and Louis Haar, age 70. Earlier today, a relative of the two Israeli hostages freed in Rafah called for Israel to reach a deal now.
And we know about the discussions in Cairo or in Paris and others between the Hamas, between Israeli, with the mediators. Please be serious and strike a deal. The Israeli people needs the deal done. Not yesterday, not tomorrow, today. We want it done as soon as possible in order to give us some breathe. We must breathe. A little bit.
Now, yeah. This is very interesting because this is a man whose beloved ones have been held since October 7th. But he's saying we cannot rest unless all the hostages are freed. And he's calling for a truce. But that is not what Netanyahu is calling for. Are you concerned that finding these hostages in an apartment building in Rafah will lead to more bombing and attacks in Rafah or to justify a full-scale assault?
Amy, Israel is not concerned. The Israeli government is not concerned with its hostages. If they were, they would have engaged in good faith negotiations. The diplomatic negotiations led to the relief of 136 hostages. That wasn't any military operations. After 5 months, they've only extracted two hostages. We know that the families want a truce. We know that the government is opposing a truce. We know that the concern is not the hostages. Israel shot to kill two of them, two of their own who were raising white flags and speaking in Hebrew, giving us an idea that this is not a legitimate war. This is a genocidal campaign of extermination. Last night, the images that came out of Rafah are horrifying. There was a young girl, her legs cut off, hanging off of a wire by her shirt. This is disproportionate, excessive force that is meant to terrorize a population that is telling them, you have no life here. There is no future here. You must leave. That is the message that is being sent. We're seeing young children who are forced to be far older than their age. A young boy who escaped bombing, having his head and the blood cleaned off of it, telling the world, "Nobachafish, I am not scared." How can he not be scared in this situation? How are all of us not terrified? We have taken away life for these children. We are decimating their future, even if we do survive. Images of babies who are being removed from the rubble with only two limbs, with no family members left. What is their future? And yet we're obscuring these atrocities. We're obscuring these genocidal campaigns with words of distraction. We're taking it and abstracting it to warfare and strategy, hostages and the negotiations. When the humanitarian situation speaks for itself, when tribunals have told us repeatedly, this is a genocide. It must be ended unequivocally. And that is incumbent upon us now before we see the last city in Gaza, the one that is normally home to 220,000 Palestinians, now housing 1.5 million Palestinians, 80% of the population in tents and in dire humanitarian situation. We should be rushing in to treat them with medicine, with food, with water, with adequate care, rather than now preparing massacres for them, like the speaker before you, Dua, who has created a GoFundMe to save herself and her children. This is our responsibility. Last word on this. There is a concept in international law known as state responsibility, where a state can, must deal with the action, the consequences of its actions. It cannot, Israel cannot say that it is now fighting a war of self-defense, which it doesn't have a right to under international law against territory that it occupies. But if those actions are illegal, it must bear the consequences for them. Israel has imposed a siege against international law for 17 years, imposed a military, prolonged military occupation for 56 years, imposed an apartheid regime, which is a crime against humanity, that the international community has said is an apartheid regime, and still asking the world for an exception and blaming the Palestinians as the assailants as it is committing a genocide, and now asking the world to let it commit genocide as a form of exception, that somehow it is like any other situation, and rather than meet that with the full force of diplomatic and international will to rebuff it, instead we're allowing Israel to create that exception, which will make none of the world safe when other powerful countries and nuclear powers decide that they want to decimate inconvenient population, a native population as in this case, in order to fulfill its national interests. It defies all of the logic of international legal institutions and international law, which are set up to regulate things like this in this very moment.
We just have 10 seconds, but you have a top aide to President Biden admitting that the Biden administration has made many missteps since the beginning of this. What do you think they could do, a single action that could make the greatest difference when it comes to what Israel does in Gaza, Noura Erekat?
They can abstain in the Security Council and allow an immediate ceasefire to take place. Biden can pick up the phone and tell Netanyahu to stop. They can actually stop the weapons transfers or even revoke this supplemental budget, which plans to resettle Palestinians in what will be an ethnic cleansing campaign and complicity in genocide. There are so many things to be done. These are empty words aimed at the 2024 elections as opposed to aimed at compliance with international law to meet our duty and responsibility under the Genocide Convention.
We want to thank you for being with us. Palestinian human rights attorney, associate professor at Rutgers University, author of Justice for Some, Law on the Question of Palestine. And that does it for our show. Democracy Now! Produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Gesder, Messiah Rhodes. Happy birthday, Messiah. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, CNN host Dana Bash asked a question in the Republican presidential debate a couple weeks ago in Des Moines, Iowa. Quote, the rate of inflation is down. Prices, though, are still high, and Americans are struggling to afford food, cars, and housing. What is the single most important policy that you would implement as president to make the essentials in Americans' lives more important? Close quote. Unfortunately, she asked the question of Nikki Haley, who answered with word salad involving wasteful spending on a COVID stimulus bill that expanded welfare that's now left us with 80 million Americans on Medicaid, 42 million Americans on food stamps, and concluded with the admonition, quit borrowing, cut up the credit cards. Cut up the credit cards is interesting advice for people who are having trouble affording diapers, but it's the sort of advice politicians and pundits dole out and that corporate news media present as a respectable worldview worthy of our attention. There is another view that acknowledges that the same people who earn wages also buy groceries, and pretending that we are pitted against one another is not just misinformation, but disinformation. Rakeen Mahboud is chief economist and managing director of policy and research at Groundwork Collaborative. They have new work on what's driving grocery prices that doesn't involve getting mad at people using food stamps. We'll hear from her today on the show. That's coming up, but first, a quick look back at some recent press. The UN says that nearly 100,000 people are dead, wounded, or missing in the Gaza Strip as a result of Israel's bombing campaign. How do you make sense of such a toll occurring in real time? And more, how do you make its justification a debatable point? Well, one thing you do is what the New York Times star columnist Thomas Friedman did, which is to imply that those dead, wounded, and missing aren't really human beings. Friedman's piece in the online Times feature The Point, which the paper describes as conversations and insights about the moment, compared the targets of U.S. bombs in the Middle East to vermin, the metaphor that propagandists have historically used to justify genocide.